Welcome to the Ringer's NBA Free Agency Reactions. Yeah! John Gonzalez, Kevin O'Connor. We are live from Ringer HQ. How's your Sunday going? Super chill? Nothing happening? All kinds of things.
It's a slow day.
Very slow day in the NBA. Very slow day here in Los Angeles at Ringer HQ. Before the clock even ticked down to 6 p.m. Eastern time, 3 p.m. Pacific, a ton of news has happened, Kevin. I guess we should start in Brooklyn where the Nets are all of a sudden the new super team. They go out and they get Kevin Durant and his one Achilles, the other Achilles to be named later. And we have Kyrie Irving and Garrett Temple. And apparently also they're adding DeAndre Jordan. Your reactions to the Brooklyn Nets overhauling a team that was pretty good last year.
Well, generally it's as if the 6 p.m., 3 p.m. was the deadline, not the start of free agency. And for the Brooklyn Nets,
nobody was tampering, by the way.
No, there's
this all happened within seconds.
No tampering. You know, for Brooklyn, obviously they're going to get better immediately with Kyrie Irving. This 1 year without Kevin Durant, there was some talk recently, Gonz, about do you want D'Angelo Russell or Kyrie? To me, it's obvious. You want Kyrie Irving. He's a better scorer from the perimeter, a better passer, a more proven player in the playoffs. The fact he's also bringing Kevin Durant, even if KD doesn't get back to the KD we know, the 100% elite player that he was prior to this Achilles injury, at 75%, KD can come back next season and make the Brooklyn Nets an immediate contender for the coming years.
Woj said that KD notified Golden State and Bob Myers on Sunday. KD, probably while we're talking right now, is announcing this.
How about
this.
That, man? How about that? Steph Curry flies all the way from China to New York. All the way from China to New York just to get told no. But at least they did everything they could.
Yeah, I mean, they tried, and it felt like for a while that KD was on the move, and then the Achilles injury happens, and all of a sudden it was, well, maybe not. Maybe this will give them a chance to retain him. Maybe he'll even pick up his option and stay in rehab on their dime, and then they decided not to do that.
No.
I want to bring you back to I hear what you're saying. Like, on paper, yes, this is obviously a much better Brooklyn Nets team. Mm-hmm. But they had a good season last season with D'Angelo Russell. And I think that you're right that ostensibly on paper, Kyrie is a better player than D'Angelo Russell. But this is something that Dan Devine wrote about for The Ringer. You should check it out on our website. That is he appreciably better at a max number than, say, D'Angelo Russell would have been in the, like, 25 to 27 million range?
Yeah, much better.
Hands down.
It's not
a question.
It's not even close.
And are you also factoring in Kyrie being Kyrie with his galaxy brain and, like, chemistry concerns and, like, who knows what happens with those guys? Like,
D'Angelo Russell's a good player. He's a good player, and he had a career best season last year. But so much of what he did last year was fueled by his mid-range potency. He shot over 45% from mid-range pull-ups. He shot over 50% on mid-range floaters, and he still had an almost historically low free throw rate. In an article I have either going up tonight or tomorrow morning on The Ringer, I detail how, like, he has the second lowest free throw rate of any player ever that attempted over 18 shots per game.
Is that bad?
It's really horrible. Okay. And so for Russell, it's the type of thing where when the shot's not falling, like it wasn't in the postseason, he can be limited, whereas Kyrie Irving can do whatever.
They put
on the
Ben
court.
Simmons on him in that postseason, and that was a tough ask for him. I mean, and they did have a lot of other guards that ended up stepping up for him. But yes, I'm with you that this is an upgrade. Like, this is an upgrade. However,
even without KD,
I would like to believe the Philadelphia in me would like to believe that maybe we're getting just a touch ahead of ourselves with automatically, like, declaring that the Brooklyn Nets are now the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. Because we did that last year with what was that team that you used to cover and follow?
The Boston Celtics. Yes,
where it was all the Shamrock and the Leprechaun. Somebody who owns a very successful media company said that they were slotted for 67 wins, and then all of a sudden Kyrie went and blew up their chemistry and there was infighting and this, like, internecine warfare. And I'm just saying, like, we should pump the brakes just a little bit. Also because, look, if you can get KD, you get KD. Go do that. Smart for you. Congratulations to Sean Marks and the Brooklyn Nets for overhauling this team so quickly. But let's not forget that this is, like, the worst possible injury that you could have, and it's going to take some time. And who knows what the NBA landscape looks like in a year. I'm talking myself into this is going to be fine for the Eastern Conference.
Well, here's the thing, right? The NBA landscape right now, it depends so much on what Kawhi Leonard does. As of now, with Kawhi still a free agent, if he goes back to Toronto or goes to the Clippers, the league is going to be more open than it has ever been maybe this entire decade, maybe since 07 or 08, if Kawhi goes to the Lakers, you know, just throw that comment in the trash. It goes back to being a league where a lot of inevitabilities, like we had with Golden State, like we had with the Miami Heat led by LeBron James. But right now with KD and Kyrie Irving, they're one of the multiple teams that have an actual shot of competing for the finals for the foreseeable future. But so much is going to be determined by what Kawhi does. Still, though, in the Eastern Conference gons, it's hard to get much better than what the Nets have right now. It's just not going to be happen for them this year. It's what's going to happen moving forward.
I want to stay with this Nets topic for a second, but as I'm looking over your shoulder, because we've got the television on just like you guys do, I just saw that it looks like JJ Redick, Ringer podcast or Ringer teammate JJ Redick to the Pelicans on a 2-year deal.
Wow.
Sorry to see him go. Glad that he's still going to be at the Ringer.
Good for him.
Would I like to see him stay in Philadelphia, because
that's a much longer commute for him.
It's Brooklyn. You can't just drive down from Brooklyn. This sucks for the Sixers because they really needed that offense for him. Like mm-hmm. they were, you know, it's kind of weird to say that a team with Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris and JJ Redick and Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid were offensively challenged at times. And we're going to get to the Sixers in a second, but honestly, like JJ Redick really was their instant offense when they needed it a number of times, and to unplug him from that team, that's a big hole to fill.
Sure. And, you know, from what I'm hearing is it sounds like Philadelphia will get Al Horford, and he's not a shooter like JJ Redick, but what he does at least provide is some size. So if Philadelphia is able to keep Tobias Harris, re-sign him, and add Al Horford while losing Jimmy Butler, they're going to be a team like, who is built to defend a team that big? If you can roll out Embiid, Horford, Simmons, Harris as your big four with a fifth out there.
Yeah, that's what everybody said last year when they were like, look how big the Sixers are. And then, you know.
But they were four bounces away from beating
Toronto. They were four bounces
away. And then who knows what happens in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then maybe they win the whole dang thing, man. Like Philadelphia, despite all their flaws, despite the imperfect fit with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, now if they were able to add Al Horford, another big guy who can space the floor and playmake, and if they keep Tobias Harris, they're still like, if not the favorite in the East, they're one of the favorites in the East. And it all comes back down to what Kawhi Leonard decides to do.
I know how much you love Al Horford. Like selling me on Al Horford at his age, though, requires how many years is this deal? Then we'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. Because if we're talking a 4-year deal, I'm not crazy about signing, 33-year-old Al Horford to a 33? four-year deal. If it's
issues.
A 2-year deal, then we can discuss it. I got the whole they're the biggest team in the Eastern Conference, the biggest team thing last year,
biggest
and now all of a sudden
it's
falling apart. There's a lot of balls that they have in the air right now that they're juggling, and I want to see where they land before I like ultimately render my verdict here. I like Al Horford fine. I think he's a very good player. Now, obviously, there were serious concerns last year. We saw what happened when they had to try to squeeze like 2 minutes out of Greg Monroe in the postseason, and like, everything
Johnson,
went to total shit.
Jonah Bolden.
Yeah, and you could potentially play those guys together. But again, what's the deal look like and for how many years? And it worries me that they might have to give him more years than I would be comfortable with at his age.
Here's the thing, though, with Philadelphia. It's like, yes, Joel
Embiid. Should be Al Horford's agent.
But here's the thing. Joel Embiid is young and Ben Simmons is young.
And Al Horford is not.
But Embiid moved around sometimes like he was 40. So for Philadelphia, to me, the window is now. It's yeah. Like, yes, the third and fourth year of that Horford contract, if they sign him, which it sounds like they very well may, right. Might. The window is now. Like, now is the time to capitalize in a year where KD's out, where Klay Thompson is out for most of the season. The Western Conference, we'll see what happens over there. And then the East, depending again on what Kawhi does, it is completely wide open. If Kawhi leaves the Raptors, Philadelphia, to me, is the favorite in the East.
When the whole of Philadelphia starts burning later, we're going to have you talk them down off the ledge, because that was a good pep talk. Woj reporting right now, 76ers have already started the discussions with Rich Paul on an extension for Ben Simmons. There was some question about when that would begin and whether or not they do it in earnest. Obviously, they're going to want to extend Ben Simmons, but then there was questions about would Ben Simmons want to be extended that soon? And, you know, nobody's passed up that kind of money that he's in line for, but something also to keep an eye on. Back to the Nets for a second. You just gave me the whole preamble on the Sixers and how excited you are for them potentially to be the Eastern Conference favorites, even if you do shuffle out some of these guys. Where do you slot the Nets next season without KD, obviously?
I think that they're maybe four or five in the East. They're solid. They'll be a good playoff team. I think you can't be underestimated that they added Taurean Prince, a guy who adds another size at the wing position for them. Like, they're not a contender by any means, but assuming Caris LeVert continues making progress, they're going to be a good team, man.
Like, what's your level of confidence that Kyrie will behave himself?
I mean,
post contract, new place.
Kyrie doesn't deserve all the blame for what happened in Boston. No. He deserves a large, significant portion of it. Yes. But all of it, no. Like, part of it was just the circumstances with a guy like Terry Rozier who wanted to get paid and did get paid, getting a $58 million contract with an option in the final year. Then you have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, two younger players who led a team to the Eastern Conference Finals. And then Hayward comes back and Irving comes back, and suddenly their opportunities are taken away. It was just a mix that just didn't work out. And part of that's on Irving for his passive aggressive comments in the media, for all the things, the smear campaign, all the things that have been reported about him. Part of it is on Kyrie and the drama that naturally surrounds him. However, he's not a bad dude at heart. A lot of players around the league like him for good reason. He's a very relatable player that players like to play with, like Kevin Durant. And so for Brooklyn, yeah, you might have to deal with some more drama, but you're getting a player who has proven himself on the championship stage, and you're getting a guy that brought along Kevin Durant with him. Like, it's for Brooklyn, they're going to be better this year with him over Russell, and obviously they're better set up for the future with KD.
More news from Woj. Terrence Ross off the board, 4 years, $54 million to Orlando. Boy. That's a guy that I thought, like, hey, that could be interesting for the Sixers if they end up losing JJ. Not that all roads come back to Philadelphia. Boy, but
Orlando really filling up their roster with these all-stars. Yeah. Nikola Vucevic and Terrence Ross. How does Vucevic get double what Brooke Lopez gets? Are you kidding me?
I mean, well, I think for Orlando, you're just going to want to throw as much money as possible and keep your fingers crossed. The ripple effects for the Nets here. So D'Angelo Russell is going to move on. Where do you like him? Because we've heard a lot of smoke about maybe Minnesota. That would require Gersan Rosas and Sachin Gupta to do some nifty front office maneuvering. And by the way, I am all in on those two guys, and they're super smart, and I think they're going to be able to do that. But do you like him to Minnesota? Is it possible he ends up with the Lakers? What do we think here?
You know, with Russell, I like him from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a perfect pick and roll partnership with
Carl. Are you moving Towns. Wiggins out in that scenario?
I mean, I'd love to move Andrew Wiggins out. Right, I know Moe's our radio producer and Timberwolves fan is sitting
getting there, very excited. He's going to knock over the cameras.
Big smile on his face. But good luck moving Andrew Wiggins. That's the problem. You may be in a situation where you're more likely to move a Jeff Teague with a Robert Covington in order to create close to enough cap space for Russell. But here's the thing, man. Like, it would help them on the offensive end of the floor. But with those two guys, Russell and Towns, you're going to really need to surround those two with a lot of great wing defenders, because Russell is not a good defender at the point guard position, and Towns at center is average, sometimes good. Yeah. So, like, Towns is really going to have to become the guy that he showed he could be at the college level at Kentucky. When, look, Towns was drafted first because of his defense, not because of his offense.
Yeah, you're right.
It just hasn't clicked for him all the way in the NBA. And he had a career best year last year on the defensive end of the floor. That needs to continue improving for him, for that partnership to work.
Offensively, that could be a lot of fun, though.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
So we have the Nets having a very, very good day in New York. The other team in New York, not such a good day. This is something you and I have talked about previously. I want to say it very quietly. I want to say it very quietly because the boss is somewhere around here rattling around, like probably crying about the Knicks. You and I have talked about the Knicks. You actually have liked previously the way that the front office has like tried to set things up. I'm more of an LOL Knicks kind of person. This is not a good look for them because they go and they trade.
Can I be both?
Hold on. Maybe you can. Yeah, absolutely. You can. But so I understand why they moved on from Kristaps Porzingis, because Kristaps didn't want to be there and they had come to a loggerhead and fine. But that's the kind of guy that you make these moves to get. And then if you're going to offload him, you've got to go into free agency, like, just knowing that you're going to replace somebody, you're going to replace him with a superstar. And clearly right now, that's going to be awfully difficult. According to Peter Vesey, he's got them in talks to do a sign-and-trade for Quinn Cook. And David Aldridge has them pivoting to target Julius Randle, Bobby Portis, George Hill, and Reggie Bullock, which is womp-womp time. If you're the Knicks, you just stay catching L's here, and you can't be happy about this.
Here's the thing with the Knicks. I think Steve Mills has done a fine job since he got hired. And so if that's the starting point, I think the Knicks have been fine. Put aside all the James Dolan stuff, which does matter. Steve Mills has done a fine job so far. For Brooklyn, it's the type of thing where whoever they sign this summer, they need to be building towards 2021. They could enter that offseason, 21 offseason, with RJ Barrett, Kevin Knox, Mitchell Robinson, their 2020 first round draft pick, their 2021 first round draft pick, and the Dallas Mavericks.
And tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. It's
it's all about tomorrow.
About tomorrow for them since, you know, five yesterdays ago, where they were like, okay, no, well, the year is really going to be this, or it was going to be, you know, LeBron and the LeBron, decision.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Like, at some point, you're a team that just, despite the fact that you're playing in the Mecca and you're playing in MSG and you're supposed to be one of the flagship franchises of the NBA, like, at some point, you have to wonder why free agents aren't going there when they have attractive situations potentially to get max slots. And that's, I think, leads like directly back to James Dolan.
You need to make yourself attractive, is what I mean. Like, over the next few years, you need to build with a young core and add some guys. Julius Randle would be a good signing for them. Like, some of these guys are laughable compared to getting Kevin Durant with a healthy Achilles and getting Kyrie Irving with him. But it's still not the worst thing in the world to have a young team that's growing organically with some other young guys like Julius Randle. And maybe you build towards 2021, a loaded free agent class, which is going to be headlined by Giannis. And is also going to have guys like
Giannis is the next guy going to New York.
Sure, but he might not. He probably won't. But it's like Bradley Beal, Rudy Gobert. You can build towards that next decade. It's like not the end of the world for the Knicks. It's just like,
I don't know.
These next two years are critical, though. You need to fix the perception of you around the league. Granted, like, you could also say, well, the Lakers didn't have to do anything, and they still got LeBron, and then they got AD. But for the Knicks, like, I think that perception is real and it exists. No matter who you talk to around the league, players, coaches, executives, the Knicks are sort of a laughing stock. So they need to fix that over the next 2 years.
Bigger, I mean, it's, to me, like, I can't think of a team that, and we'll get to the Clippers in a second, like, they have high hopes still that maybe Kawhi ends up in Los Angeles. But, like, if we're talking about the two teams that all season long we were hearing, oh, this is going to be their offseason, they're going to go out and sign the big boys, it was those two teams. And, like, at least the Clippers still have a good team, even if they strike out. The Knicks don't. So to me, it kind of does feel like the end of the world, because if you're going to trade a Kristaps Porzingis to clear this cap space, the whole point in doing so was to get somebody now, not later. Like, and yes, the dynamics were changed by KD and his Achilles getting blown out, but still, like, you know,
it's too bad.
I would be really worked up if I was them.
That KD injury has bothered me more and more as the weeks have passed since it happened. It's like, initially my first reaction is like, well, first of all, like, obviously it stinks for KD, and like, what does this mean for the Warriors? But like, as time has passed, it's like, dang, we're going to be without one of the game's greatest for a full year without a guarantee that he ever gets back to being his full self. And like, that's really a sad thing, that we might be losing him at his peak powers when the whole conversation the last year is about how he would go to New York or go wherever and lead his own team and do it his own way. And we're not going to get that. But what we might get, though, is like the reemergence of him going from a hated player with the Warriors to maybe becoming beloved again with the Brooklyn Nets, the comeback. And I'm rooting for KD to get back and be healthy.
Brian Phillips just wrote about that for The Ringer for us, about how for a long time it was people getting angry at KD for playing basketball and doing the thing he loves. And now he's got a chance to rehab the narrative surrounding him by not doing the thing that we like to watch him do. It's kind of a very strange situation. Some more red meat before we get to the red meat. Actually, we got Sham saying Trevor Ariza on a 2-year, $25 million deal to Sacramento. Sacramento also expected to retain Harrison Barnes, and also they're looking at a Dwayne Dedman contract. So I guess good for Sacramento. That's fine. You know, they want to sign some guys, off they go. Terry Rozier, this is something, and we're going to get to why this happened in a second with Kemba. But Terry Rozier on a full, according to Shams, a fully guaranteed 3-year, $58 million deal to the Charlotte Hornets. That feels banana town to me. Like, really, truly crazy to give that much money to Terry Rozier when you were all of a sudden out on Kemba Walker, who is considerably better. How do you feel about what Charlotte's doing? Do you know what Charlotte's doing? I feel like Charlotte is the most mysterious and confusing and hard to understand what the hell they're doing organization this side of the Phoenix Suns.
Have they ever shown any indication that they know what they're doing under Michael Jordan's leadership? You know, for the Hornets, it's, if you're a Hornets fan, it's got to be a little bit disappointing here. Bruising, because for the last 2 years, first last year in the 2017-18 season under Rich Cho, and then this year under the new regime, they had opportunities to trade Kemba Walker. And each time Michael Jordan said no. And the expectation across the league was that the Hornets would do everything that they could to re-sign Kemba Walker and keep their franchise player. They did not do that. There were reports, which I believe to be true, that they offered a 5-year, $160 million contract, which is about $60 million short of the full Supermax they could have offered. And so for Charlotte, it's like, it makes some sense to let go of Kemba. He's 29. He's had three knee surgeries. He's a tiny point guard that might not age well. So signing him to that money would lock you in, and you're going to have no route to really becoming a competitive team. However,
right. the fact you're is signing a different tiny point guard.
However, the fact is like, yeah, you signed a different tiny point guard who's unproven and only had like one real strong stretch, but you also had opportunities to trade Kemba and get more in return for him yeah. 2 years in advance or this year at the deadline. And they said no. So they effectively lost Kemba Walker for an overpay for Terry Rozier, which like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
So the only part, and I've heard this and I want to see what like you think about it. The only part that might maybe kind of a little bit make sense on why didn't they trade him at the deadline was that they were trying to make it into the postseason and they wanted to reach the playoffs for the first time in a
while.
So
they could get smoked in the first round.
Right, I'm with you. Yeah. Like, that still doesn't make any sense.
No, Michael
like,
Jordan just wanted his two games of exactly. playoff revenue. Like, that's
get the revenue in the gate. Some more news here. Woj has Alfarico Muno. You were saying, what the hell is Orlando doing? How about 3 years for the Chief and $30 million, $29 million dollars from the Magic?
Whoa.
So the Magic really enjoyed Magic making the hard. Postseason. Shouts to Kevin Clark's Magic. Yeah. They really enjoyed making the postseason. And they're going to try to do it again, gang. And who knows? They might even win a couple games.
The big X factor there is Markel Fultz.
you can't rush these things. Markel could be back at any time.
Just gotta be really, really, really patient with Markel.
Really patient.
Did you see he posted a Snapchat of a video from last summer when he was training?
Sure. They said I saw that there were reports from Orlando saying that that Markel was in like really fantastic shape, and I will buy that when I see it. All right, that's enough Markel talk. Boston's got a lot of pieces moving around here too. I think that this could be a Ewing theory situation where you're removing Kyrie Irving and it might end up being better for them. I like Kemba Walker. Yes, as you mentioned, he's 29 years old, so he's older than Kyrie, and he does have the knee situation. However, by all accounts, he does a lot of things that will fit with Brad Stevens' offense, and he go along guy. He's a super nice dude. I think you fold him into that dynamic and you put some of that other like animosity with Kyrie behind you. The question is, there were varying reports on Al Horford. We'll say he's out of the mix for right now. Do you like them retooling on the fly with Kemba?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's an element of risk here for the reasons you just stated with his age and the knee issues he's had in the past. So far, it hasn't limited him on the court. We'll see if that happens long term. But with Kemba, for Boston, they're going from Isaiah Thomas to Kyrie Irving and now to Kemba Walker. All three point guards are fairly similar. Mm-hmm. They're smaller. They can attack off dribble, shoot from anywhere. Kemba is a bit more like Isaiah Thomas, which should be a good thing for the Celtics because of his willingness and ability to shoot off of tough angles, off screens and handoffs. Irving is a better player, to be clear, a better shooter, better at getting to the rim, better at scoring at the rim. But Kemba Walker does have some advantages because even though he doesn't get to the rim quite as much as Kyrie, he draws more fouls. He is a more willing shooter off of screens, which should allow Boston to get into more of their crisp motion actions that they went a little bit away from.
It was
Kyrie.
Kind of a problem with Kyrie. Like it was sort of a catch 22 because on the one hand that keep the ball moving, Brad Stevens offense where they're sharing the ball was really good for everybody else. But the thing that Kyrie does best a lot of the time is give him the ball, let him cook an ISO. And those two things were sometimes at odds. And I think it frustrated some of the other Celtics last year. So maybe Kemba is a better fit there. I want to talk about a team that I think
One thing on Boston, though, it's like losing Al Horford potentially, though, his importance can't be understated.
Give me your Al Horford. Do you like Al Horford?
I love Al Horford. Everybody should love Al Horford. What Al Horford does, he's somebody who goes beyond the box score. What he did for Isaiah Thomas with opening passing lanes on dribble handoffs because he's such a threat from three and such a good playmaker for a big man. So did the same thing for Kyrie Irving to a little bit of a lesser extent. And he would have done the same thing for Kemba. And now for Boston, they need to find answers. They need to find a new big man because right now in the Eastern Conference, they're a good team with Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. They're a good team, still well positioned. However, they don't have a big man. They have Robert Williams. They got rid of Baines. They have Gershon Yabusele. They have Grant Williams and Semi Ojeleye. So they're going to be a team that's going to be playing small a lot. But they need to find a traditional center and to replace Al Horford. It's impossible to replace
him. I really like how much you stand for Al Horford and you just rattling off like 17 big men. I think you made up a couple of those names. I can't be sure that any of them are actually players. I do, however, wish that the rest of you could see the look that that I'm seeing, because over here in the corner, I've got Chris Ryan just smirking in Kevin O'Connor's direction at this. I don't think he's buying what you're selling about the Boston Celtics. I want to talk about a team that we've completely overlooked here, who with the Sixers, not the Sixers, I'm just using them as a pivot point. With the Sixers, everybody in Philadelphia was like very much, hey, let's run it back. This could be really good. As you said, they were one freak bounce away from going to the Eastern Conference Finals, and who knows, maybe beyond. The team that actually looks like it's running it back and that is in a really good position to have another like growth year next year is the Milwaukee Bucks. Yeah. The Milwaukee Bucks look like they go out and they're going to retain Chris Middleton. They signed Brooke Lopez to a good number. And now all of a sudden they've got a chance to bring back Malcolm Brogdon.
Well, this is it. This is your core for the next 2 years with Giannis Antetokounmpo. This is it. And what they have is a core that was close this season. And assuming Giannis continues improving, assuming Malcolm Brogdon continues improving, and there are other young pieces, this is a strong enough core to make a title run. So for the Milwaukee Bucks, like, good on them to get Brooke Lopez at the number that they did. What was it, $52, $54 million? And then to get Chris Middleton slightly below the max is great value. However, we will see what Brogdon ends up getting. He could be a player that receives an offer sheet over $20 million annually from like a team like the Bulls or the Magic. And we'll see how that develops. But for Milwaukee, like, keeping Brogdon was important, and as well as keeping Middleton and Brooke Lopez at a fine cap number.
Because we brought it up and because things are constantly changing, they changed as we were talking about this. There's reports out of Milwaukee that potentially the Bucks are working on a sign and trade with Malcolm Brogdon to Philadelphia, of all places. Where
who's that from?
This is from Jerry Wolfel.
Interesting.
Yes, 105.7 in Milwaukee. We'll see whether or not he's onto something with that. But I'll say that Malcolm Brogdon's a guy who, despite the fact that on the Heat Check podcast we give him shade all the time for being for stealing that Rookie of the Year award from not one but two Philadelphia 76ers, coming into this offseason, I really thought, hey, as a contingency plan, if Jimmy Butler and or Tobias Harris walked away, you know who would be really interesting for the Philadelphia 76ers? Malcolm Brogdon, because he does a lot of things that you'd want. Like, there's a case to be made in in that Milwaukee postseason that after Giannis, that Malcolm Brogdon might have been their second best player, right? Like, I think like Chris Middleton, I like him a lot. I think that he's worth the max. I think you should keep him with Giannis and run them out there and keep that core together. But losing Brogdon or signing and trading him because you can't offer him the same money would, I think, be a blow for them and a boom potentially for the Sixers if that's the team that he ends up going to.
For sure. I mean, Brogdon, his importance next
to Giannis. Talk about Brogdon again.
I mean, his importance next to Giannis as a secondary ball handler, a guy who can space the floor,
switchable
defender. Like, he's critical, and losing him would be quite a blow. We'll see how that develops.
I really liked him.
One other note, saw this pop up on my Twitter timeline over here. Danny Green talking with the Dallas Mavericks.
Sure.
Danny Green, again, another one of those critical role players.
Jason Gallagher, also a look that you can't see right now.
Oh, yeah.
On the one hand, we have Chris Ryan. Back in the other corner, we have Jason Gallagher, who's a big Mavs fan.
A Hallelujah fan.
I don't think quite as excited about Danny Green as maybe Chris might be about Malcolm Brogdon.
Rubio to the Suns
is just announced by Shams. 3-year, $51 million deal. This is actually surprising.
That's awful.
This is surprising because, so we're going to get into why Kevin thinks it's awful in just a second.
Because he can't shoot.
But for a while, it was supposed to be, he was going to go to the Pacers. The Pacers were the hot team for Ricky Rubio. It looked like they were going to sign him and they looked like the front runner, and now they're not.
Why?
And
why are the Phoenix?
Well, for the Pacers, by the way, the Pacers just threw 3 years and $31.5 million at Jeremy Lamb instead. So I
wait
like-
a minute. Wait, what was that number for Lamb?
$31.5 million. All right, let's start with Ricky Rubio, because I refuse to have your Ricky Rubio slander. I love Ricky Rubio. He's a handsome man.
Yeah, he's handsome.
He's a good pick and roll defender. He's not going to be a ball stopper. Yes, he's got some shooting issues, but you've got Devin Booker there to crank up three balls.
Here's the thing. Like, I would have loved to have seen, and this to me, Rubio can help Devin Booker for the reason you just said. He can push Booker off ball, and soon enough, people will stop whining about Booker being an on-ball ball hog. He's going to be a guy who more frequently Did Woj just tweet?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff is happening right now. All right, so I'm going to cut you off from Ricky Rubio because more things have happened. Malcolm Brogdon has agreed to a deal with Indiana as a restricted free agent.
That's a big move.
And Bojan Bogdanovic is going to the Utah Jazz. They were, within the last day or so, rumored to be the hot team for Bogdanovic. He's going for 4 years and $73 million to Utah. Utah taking a big swing, deciding that now is the time for the Jazz to win the Western Conference. It might very well be. We were in the process of talking about Malcolm Brogdon being in a sign-and-trade to Philadelphia. Now, all of a sudden, we got to find out what this number on the offer sheet is, because Indiana would like to make him a Pacer. So it will be up to the Milwaukee Bucks to decide if they're going to match that offer sheet.
Is that a coin toss? Is he gonna go back?
It depends on what the number is, right? I mean, I think that all this entire offseason before free agency actually began, the Bucks probably had a walkaway number on Malcolm Brogdon. How much do they want to go into the tax? It's a small market team. I think if you want to keep Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee for the foreseeable future, you're going to have to go out and at least try to retain all these guys. But at some point, the price point becomes prohibitive. Do we have the price point on Malcolm Brogdon? So, Indiana's trading a first round and two future second round picks to to Milwaukee for Malcolm Brogdon. Wow. So I guess it looks like it's done. Malcolm Brogdon has agreed to a 4-year, $85 million deal with Indiana. Wow. That's the walkaway number. And this works out. You know what?
So he did get the $20 million annually.
A first round and two future second rounders for Milwaukee. If you're going to say goodbye to Malcolm Brogdon, that's a nice parting gift.
Depends largely on what year it is. But this is a major blow for Milwaukee. His importance can't be understated. As a two-way player, as a secondary ball handler who helped Giannis Antetokounmpo, alleviating pressure off of Giannis. And now you look at Milwaukee, they're going to have to rely on Eric Bledsoe, who stunk in the postseason.
He wasn't good.
Malcolm Brogdon is a...
George Hill was better than Eric Bledsoe for large chunks of it.
He's a free agent
now. And he is also a free agent.
Malcolm Brogdon is somebody who the only real concern with him was the foot. He has had a foot injury that was surgically repaired in college that he got red flagged by various teams entering the draft. But he's been fine thus far with that injury so far in the NBA. So that's about it. He's a good defender who's big, who plays hard. He's a smart player, a great guy in the locker room, a leader by example, a great 3-point shooter, a guy who can attack off the dribble, who can pass and run pick and roll. That player, he was not more important than Chris Middleton from Milwaukee, but pretty close.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
There are a ton of people out there who love Malcolm Brogdon more than us, but I'm with you. I thought that Chris Middleton was the most important cog because those 3-and-D wings, and he is really good. Was my number one priority for the Bucks. But 1A was Brogdon, but that was always going to be a question if you were going to bring back Brook Lopez as well. So I think if it's going to be this kind of money where it's 4 years and $85 million and he's going to leave anyway, to get a first round pick and two future seconds, I mean, would you rather have Malcolm Brogdon? Yes, but you can't apparently have everything. So this is, as parting gifts go, it could be worse.
Yeah, it could be worse. And maybe you can use that first round draft pick to pick up another asset.
Right.
But right now you look at their roster, man, they're still a contender, but they're lacking that third guy. And I think this year really could be their window. They need to add somebody else for this year using their assets or next year in order to maximize their remaining 2 years. Or more, they hope, with Giannis Antetokounmpo. And for Indiana, of course, think about him next to Victor Oladipo. Everything that I just said about all the positive qualities that he brings, now he provides a perfect balance
that's a really
in the backcourt with Victor Oladipo. Two great defensive guys in that backcourt who can maybe – we'll see what they do with their glut at the big man position. Miles Turner, DeMontis Sabonis.
Yeah, maybe they move one.
And then they drafted Goga Bitadze, which could allow them to move Sabonis – or Turner, more likely Sabonis, in some type of trade. You could have one of the best defensive teams with Turner manning the paint, Oladipo and Brogdon, and then the other additions that they've made at Indiana, and then have a good offense.
Yeah, as this plays out in real time, net effect, you think, for the Pacers, because they lose Bogdanovic, but they pick up your guy, Jeremy Lamb, who you're very excited about.
Oh, they got Lamb, that's right.
Yeah, they pick up Jeremy Lamb, who you're very excited about, and Malcolm Brogdon. Net effect there, win, loss? You're losing Bogdanovic, but you picked up TJ Warren before the draft.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens with that.
They're going to be a really, really, really good team.
They were a good team before, and like you said, you're going to get Oladipo back. It should be interesting.
I think Miles Turner making a leap this year. Like he played around 28, 29.
Oh, this is the leap year.
Well, I mean, he already made
going to be the leap year.
Well, he made one leap already, but making another leap now, if he's able to become a guy who's playing 32, 33 minutes per game, he's a defensive player of the year candidate, an all defensive player. And then you have Oladipo getting back healthy with Brogdon and the other additions. They could be a real dark horse team to actually make the finals.
If you're only keeping one of Turner or Sabonis, which one do you like better?
Probably Turner because of the defensive aspects. Sabonis is a more talented offensive player.
More consistent, more efficient.
Not quite the same.
But he doesn't give you the defense. No. Before we continue to other things, let's talk about the Jazz. Because the Jazz are taking some big swings here. They go out and get Mike Connolly in a trade where they could have just tried to take, they could have freed up like maybe $33 million in free agent money and gone after who knows. And instead they go after Mike Connolly and then they sign Bogdanović, who they lose Korver and super upgrade for Bogdanović. I think if you're talking about a younger, better shooter, well, not better shooter, but in terms of his age, he's a really good shooter. He was going to be a coveted free agent. I know the Lakers were talking about being interested in him. The Pacers probably would have liked to at least have a shot at re-signing him. Instead, he goes to Utah. Is Utah's time? I mean, Utah thinks its time is right now, but in terms of how the Western Conference dynamic is shaking out, like, we have to be buying them at the top of the Western Conference, no?
Like, if you're somebody who likes betting, it's not a bad time to place a bet on Utah Jazz, because you think about what Mike Conley, forget about Bogdanović for a minute, Mike Conley enhancing Donovan Mitchell in that backcourt. Mm-hmm. Conley, for this past 5-6 years or so, is one of the NBA's best pick and roll scorers, as well as one of the league's best playmakers in the pick and roll for a team that ran almost more pick and rolls than anybody in the league last year. And so that's going to make life easier on Mitchell. Then you add Bogdanović, the wing scorer, the forward that they've lacked for years now. And him and Joe Ingles with Mitchell and Conley and Rudy Gobert, you not only have a stellar defensive team, but a team that's going to be really potent and versatile on offense. Because Bogdanović, this year after Oladipo went down, he showed he can be more than just a guy who's, you know, running off screens for you, running off handoffs. Indiana put him in pick and roll.
Yeah.
And he showed that he can do a heck of a lot more with the ball in his hands. So all of those guys can handle, all of those guys can pass. So they have a multi-dimensional offense. It's also going to be great on defense. They're a real, real threat.
The offense upgrade this year is significant for them. And that was a thing that, like, last year and the year before, they were challenged for the reason. And I'm not going to disparage my guy Rick Rubio the way that you did, but this is clearly an upgrade for them in terms of, like, what they can do offensively, because there were frequently times defense was never a problem for them, but there were frequently times where, oh, they need a bucket right now, and Donovan Mitchell does not have his shot falling, and now what? Like, Joe Ingles is a good complimentary scorer, but he can't be, like, I love Joe Ingles, but it can't be, oh yeah, we could just have Joe Ingles go cook. Now you've got Mike Conley who can get you buckets. Now you've got Bogdanović who can get you buckets. You've still got Ingles. This is now a very versatile team.
Definitely. I think Utah, if you're power ranking teams in the NBA right now, Utah is not quite number one, but
pretty high up there.
Could be number one, depending on where Kawhi goes, depending on what happens. Like I said, if you're somebody who likes betting, now would be the time to place a bet on the Utah Jazz.
I, as I mentioned, am terrible at it, but I'll bet on the Jazz with your money if you want to stake me. Before we go, we're going to continue in a little while because stuff is happening fast and furious here. But before we go, we've mentioned a lot of teams. We haven't really talked about what happens with the Philadelphia 76ers if they're juggling a lot of balls here, and it's possible that they drop quite a few. This was always going to be a make or break offseason for the Sixers. We saw what they did in the draft where they decided to get rid of a lot of their second round picks. Elton Brand said that he needed every penny to throw into free agency. But by doing so, like, for me, you know, I understand why he did that, but a team that could ostensibly be hard capped, you would want a couple of bites at those really cheap rookie contracts where you'd be like, oh, okay, you know, we could develop some young talent that we could have under control for the foreseeable future at like a pittance. And now all of a sudden, the way that they've structured this offseason, it is very much a make or break deal. And, you know, we're still waiting to find out whether Jimmy Butler is going to end up in Miami or places elsewhere, what they're going to do with Tobias Harris. We've heard rumors about Al Horford being a contingency plan. Like, there's a lot of things that could go wrong for the Sixers. I thought maybe they could jump in on Brogdon. That's out the window now. How nervous should Sixers fans be with the way that they set this up and everything that they traded during the season, where it was going to be, oh, let's run it back and they gave up all those assets to now just hoping like, oh, maybe Al Horford comes.
You know, I think that Butler trade was a necessity. I think it was a fine gamble for them to take for Jimmy Butler. It just didn't work out. And maybe he leaves now for Miami. That just seems like could be the expectation. But for Philadelphia, man, like they're still in great shape. They're still in good shape, especially if you add Al Horford. Like we talked about earlier, I don't think there's many teams that are built to defend a team with that combination of size and skill. And if Embiid's able to stay healthy, which is the key to obviously any team having their star player stay healthy, but specifically with Embiid with his injury history and the fact he's 25 going on 40 at times last season, they're going to be one of the favorites in the Eastern Conference. It's like, it's not unreasonable to say we end up seeing a Philadelphia, Utah NBA finals next year. Getting Al Horford would not be such a bad thing in the world, man. It's not bad.
I like Al Horford, but not bad is not what they were going for here. If we're going to rewind to a year ago with, Brett Brown sitting in front of the media and in front of the fans and in front of the world, frankly, and going, we're going star hunting. Al Horford doesn't qualify. He just doesn't. I like Al Horford fine, but he doesn't qualify as we're taking big swings and we're trying to get meetings with LeBron James. And instead, they only get a meeting with his people. They don't get a meeting at all with Paul George. And now all of a sudden they go and actually trade for all these people. And maybe one of them leaves and like you're left going, no, Al Horford's really good. I like Al Horford, who's 33 and would potentially be 37 at the back end of a 4-year contract. I don't feel great about that. I don't feel great about that front office and all the things that they were trying to do. And all of a sudden they're trying to sell me on, you know, Al Horford in parts. Not as exciting.
I think the issue for Philadelphia will once again be depth. How do you fill gaps on the rest of that roster?
That too. Yep. And it's not even just depth. It's also high-end top-line talent because you're going to take a step back. Like, you look, again, I like Al Horford, but that is a step back from Jimmy Butler. It just is, because think about how much they needed him in the postseason where they marginalized Ben Simmons and put him in the dunker spot because he couldn't shoot, and they needed Jimmy to run all that.
What hand does he shoot with?
Right, I got the wrong shooter right over here. And we don't know what he's doing this offseason, but they needed Jimmy Butler to assume like most of the pick and roll ball handling. That's a killer.
And that's where the issue lies with this team. Ben Simmons told Zach Lowe after their postseason was over, I'm a guy who's downhill. I'm a guy who playmakes. He doesn't see himself as a guy who's setting screens, rolling to the rim. He doesn't see himself as a guy cleaning up from the dunker spot on the baseline. And that is the ultimate issue here, that Ben Simmons shoots with the wrong hand. Mm-hmm. He cannot shoot.
Hear this enough.
Somebody called him. There was a good joke on Twitter the other day.
Knock, knock, and I'll say
Kangaroo Kid Gilchrist. I don't agree with the nickname necessarily, but Kangaroo Kid Gilchrist is pretty good for Ben Simmons. I forget who said that. Apologies to whoever came up
with that. Yeah, hilarious joke whoever came up with
but
that.
But with Ben already a great player, despite the lack of a shot, but he needs to either do one of two things, improve that damn jump shot or become a guy who's willing to screen, roll to the rim, be like Draymond Green or Blake Griffin and do that and maximize that role, because he's not going to be the guy in the half court without a jump shot. So it's that for them, and then Embiid's health. That's it. Like Embiid needs to stay healthy. It's really that simple for them to remain competitive.
It's bubbling up to be very murmury in Philadelphia. I have a feeling that the people are not going to be excited about this. In Portland, before we go, free agent Rodney Hood has agreed to a 2-year, $16 million deal to return to Portland, according to Woj. And, of course, earlier in the day, they signed Dame to the Supermat vet extension. So good for him. Good for them. Good for them, yeah. They're going to keep that team together. The model of consistency in Portland and the Pacific Northwest. We'll see what happens with Philadelphia, which players they retain, which players they don't. We've got Kawhi out there still to make some news.
How about the fact that we've had so much stuff leak up the last 24 hours? We have right now, we're talking about maybe Jimmy Butler goes to Miami, and we'll see that where they move pieces in order to outright sign him. But like the one guy there's been nothing about is Kawhi Leonard.
And
nothing.
We've done, 45 minutes so far talking about free agency, and the Lakers haven't really come up? Like, what happens? Yep. We were talking about how bad this looks for the Knicks to strike out at this point where they went all in for this offseason and just got rebuffed by everybody. What would it look like for the Lakers if they go and clear that $32 million and they can't spend it on anybody? Mm. What if they strike out on Kawhi? What if they strike out on they don't get a Jimmy Butler or D'Angelo Russell or any of these other guys that we were potentially linking to them as consolation prizes? What if they've got that money and they've got to sprinkle? And there's some people who think that maybe it would be smarter for them to sprinkle the $32 million around to a number of like mid-level free agents.
Those guys
right?
are going away though.
They're going away quickly. Like, so what happens if you have that $32 million that you went and cleared and you can't spend it on anybody worth spending it on?
Unless they know something that we don't right now.
Well, who doesn't?
Maybe they do. And by the way, like just one other random thought. New Orleans Pelicans, they've had, besides Zion, they've had a great, great offseason.
Killing it.
I think signing JJ Redick, like they may not be a playoff team, but they're going to be one of those young teams that's knocking on the door for a large part of the season and maybe pushes through. If Zion is able to be one of those rare rookies who is an impact player from day one, which he very well might be.
You know who's never missed the playoffs? JJ Redick.
Boom.
Like all I'm saying is like JJ and his foresight on when he went to the Sixers and they were a young up and coming team and all of a sudden like helped be the veteran presence in the locker room and they make the playoffs. Now all of a sudden he goes down to New Orleans. And like you mentioned, David Griffin has been absolutely killing it since taking over that team, brings in JJ Redick with some of that free cap space. Like
it's pretty awesome, man.
Pretty awesome. All right. So are we coming back later or we don't know?
Let's see what happens.
We're going to see what happens. There's always something happening. The NBA never stops. We will likely be back with more free agency reactions live from Ringer HQ. There's going to be a ton of stories and content on theringer.com that you're going to want to read from all of our fantastic NBA writers. And also tonight at some point when we're done jabbering into a camera and typing into our computer machines, we're going to have a heat check that Isaac Lee will produce and push out into your podcast feed. So be on the lookout for that. Kevin O'Connor, John Gonzalez, we'll be back.
Yeah.